next case is number 18-1095, BASF Corporation versus Ethone Inc. Mr. Blythe.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. This appeal is focused on the obviousness standard that the Patent Trial and Appeal Board relied upon in an inter partes review of Enthone's 992 patent. Now, the 992 patent is directed to a method for electrodeposition of copper into very small features of semiconductors.
Mr. Blythe, in the blue brief at 49, you say significantly the board reached the opposite conclusion in its decision on 786. Why is that significant as a matter of law? I mean, what requires the PTAB to reach the same conclusion when you have different patents involved? And they're significantly different patents.
Well, I think I would disagree that they're significantly different patents, but there is no requirement that the board reach the same decision. I think it's significant because we're talking about closely related patents with almost the same specification.
Well,
and the same prior art that was combined.
Here the claims involve superfilling rather than conventional conformal filling. And the PTAB rested its finding that Ailing or Alling didn't demonstrate tectonic copolymers would have any particular or any applicability in methods requiring superfilling. That's a critical difference between the two patents, is it not?
That is what the board found. That is how they distinguished the two results. Mm-hmm. One set of claims required superfilling, the other did
not. Aren't those at least materially different factual circumstances?
Well, but I think why it's still significant that they reached different results is that the motivation to combine that the board found in the 786 case, where they found there was a motivation to combine, was the need to eliminate these voids and other plating imperfections. That was the motivation to combine, enough to take the process in Barstadt or Morrissey and combine it with Tetronix and Ollin. Now, that same exact motivation, eliminating voids and other plating imperfections, is actually more applicable, even more important and significant in a superfilling context.
I'm really confused about this. It seems to me you're trying to get too much out of this. The conflict between the two decisions is that in one, they said that Barstadt shows the use of Tetronix as a suppressor, and the other one, they say, it doesn't. It's that simple. You're trying to say that, oh, well, there was a difference on the two patents. Well, sure, there's a difference between the two patents, which makes the two decisions difficult to compare with each other. And by arguing that the results are inconsistent, you're arguing for something which, it seems to me, doesn't fly.
And I think I would agree, Your Honor, that the results have to be different. And I do agree with you about Barstadt, that there is a different finding as to Barstadt in the two cases. And that the finding as to Barstadt in the 786, if that was applied in the 992 case, then you would have a disclosure of Tetronix for superfilling in Barstadt.
And we do have cases, unfortunately not cited in your brief, which say that where the board, in closely related circumstances like this, says different things, that that's a ground for a remand, PICOR, and so on and so forth. I don't know why they weren't cited, but they weren't.
I thought we did cite one. I'll try to recall it and find it, but I agree. I think that is a basis for remand.
What's the specific finding about Barstadt and suppressors in the 786 that's inconsistent with the specific finding as to that same question about what Barstadt teaches in this case? Can you just pick out the two pages and show me them side by side?
Yes, Your Honor. So in looking at the decision in the 786 patent, and it's page 17 of that decision. And unfortunately, the page I'm looking at doesn't have the APPX number. I'll try to find that.
409?
Page 17.
Is that appendix page 409?
I believe that's correct. Correct, Your Honor. It's sort of at the end of the top paragraph there. The board states that Barstad discloses polyethylene glycol copolymers as preferable surfactant-type suppressor agents and expressly discloses the polyethylene glycol copolymers that were commercially available from BASF under the Tetronic trade name. Now, the issue here is that is, to me, a finding that Barstad is disclosing BASF's Tetronic copolymers as surfactant-type suppressor agents. Now, in the 992 patent, the board found that the Barstad disclosed suppressors and surfactants as separate components of the plating pad.
Where is that?
It's 22.
Yes, right. APPX 22 going over to 23. As Anthone points out, the compositions described in Barstad and Morrissey include a tetronic compound as a surfactant and not as a suppressor, as claimed, where each reference describes suppressors and surfactants as separate components of the electrodeposition bath. So again, we do think that is one of the reasons. Not only did they sort of ignore the motivation to combine, which I think is a separate question, but as you point out, Judge Dyke, the finding is in Barstad as to whether or not Barstad disclosed Tetronix is a surfactant-type suppressor is also inconsistent. And if you find that Barstad discloses Tetronic copolymers as a surfactant-type suppressor, there's no dispute that Barstad discloses the superfilling process and therefore using a Tetronic suppressor in connection with the superfilling process. And that was the only thing that the board found missing in terms of was really focused on the motivation to combine.
Well,
and
whether I guess as I read the board opinion, the board didn't... sometimes we don't separate these two things, and sometimes we do, but that the emphasis in context was more on the absence of reasonable expectation of success than motivation. Sometimes those are together because you say you don't have a motivation to do what you don't reasonably expect to succeed anyway. But on that point very much turns on whether the patent at issue covers or is limited to the superfilling or covers the conformal plating as well, and therefore in the 786 you didn't really have to worry about that because the doubt about these suppressors working is a doubt about whether they work for superfilling, not for the conformal plating.
Yes, I agree that the board's decision does not clearly delineate between this discussion of motivation to combine and expectation of success, so it is somewhat unclear. It's unclear the extent, it's unclear what particular standard they were even applying in terms of an expectation of success. But the correct standard is only a reasonable expectation of success is required. And I think what the board did was...
I don't remember a specific counterpoint saying they said no reasonable expectation of success as to these Tektronix suppressors for the particular purpose of superfilling, and I don't remember that you showed in your brief that as to that particular finding there's lacking substantial evidence.
And when you deal with that question, why isn't it appropriate for the PTAB to consider the level of predictability in light of the record? Because you argue that they applied an overly stringent version of the motivation to combine test. But Judge Toronto's drilling right to the record. Why, in light of the record, why isn't it appropriate?
Well, predictability may be considered. It's not that predictability can't be considered. But what the board did was took a finding of general unpredictability in the art and then use that to elevate the requirement for a showing of a very specifically stated motivation to combine. And the cases are clear that a general finding of unpredictability in the art is not the requirement. So, for example, the Allergan case, 754 F3rd 952 at 965, it does not matter whether in that case, a case about hair growth, is generally an unpredictable endeavor. The question more narrowly is whether there would be anticipated success with the particular combination that was being proposed.
I've got to confess, I'm a little confused about this expectation of success. If Barstead actually disclose the use of the tetronic compound in connection with superfilling as a suppressor, you don't have to show, in addition to that, that there's an expectation of success, right?
That's right, Your Honor. That's right.
So the question that's been the focus here is whether Barstead and Alling disclose the use of that tetronic suppressor in connection with superfilling, which has been what the debate is about.
That's right. And we think that there is more than substantial evidence in the record that Alling relates to superfilling and that Barstead separately discloses tetronics for superfilling, such that either result would lead to the required expectation of success. And I think
you argue that regarding Alling that the board erred in refusing to consider Alling's prosecution history. But the PTAB said that the prosecution, I'm quoting him, prosecution history of Alling has not been asserted as prior art in this proceeding. That's at 22. Did you submit it? And if so, where did you argue that in your opening brief?
So it was not submitted in the opening brief. It was submitted in connection with a reply and a reply declaration. But cases such as Genzyme, 825 F3rd 1360, find that it's acceptable to include references in a reply that show the background knowledge and understanding of a person of ordinary skill in the art.
Okay,
so that was in the reply.
Even if we look at prosecution history, what authority do you have that a patent's prosecution history is dispositive of or bears significant weight in determining how a person of skill would read Alling?
Yeah, we looked around and didn't find a case that specifically addressed prosecution history showing level of ordinary skill in the art. But there are plenty of cases that show that considering other patents and publications are relevant to show the background knowledge of a person of ordinary skill in the art. It just so happens that in this instance, the prosecution history explicitly spells out a person of ordinary skill in the art based on citations to certain patents. So it's not just an attorney argument in the prosecution history. It's actually citing and block quoting certain patents as well. Would have understood that when they were reviewing Alling, the same issues relate to superfilling apply to Alling. So you're talking about increased aspect ratios, defects.
But they had expert testimony from Enthone that a person of skill would not understand Alling as applying to superfilling. Why couldn't they give that more weight?
Yeah. I think this is not two points. One, I think it's not just an expert battle because when you look at the way the board analyzed, certainly the board did say we're going to give more weight to Enthone's expert than BSS. The board said that. But then if you dig into the analysis of each of those points, the board is incorrect in sort of each of the ways they did that. First, they criticized Dr. Pound for not identifying a specific statement in Alling and that's not the law under KSR. They also discounted BSF's expert testimony about the similarities between the disclosures in between Barstead and Alling because they were drafted by the same attorney for the same client. But the board gave no reasoned analysis as to why that would be a reason a person very skilled in the art would disregard the references. In my mind, that's all the more reason to think they are related if they're very similarly written for a similar client. One other point that I'd like to make about Alling in particular is that one of the key issues in Alling was this reference to 200 nanometer interconnects in Alling and whether or not that indicates Alling's applicability to superfilling. And the board made a key fact error here that needs to be corrected. The error is that the board found 200 nanometer interconnects can be plated without superfilling. And the board cited a particular paragraph of Enthone's testimony, Enthone's expert for that proposition, but that's not what that paragraph said. That paragraph said that the reference to 200 nanometers in Alling is essentially the only reference to superfilling in Alling. And, of course, that's sort of beside the point.
That's right. And that paragraph is on what page of the appendix?
I think it's 409.
Yes, so it's paragraph 69, and it's appendix pages 1029 through 1030. If you look at the actual testimony of Enthone's expert in deposition, he stated multiple times that he agreed submicron interconnects of the size discussed in Olling would require superfilling. For example, appendix page 948, page 161, 16 through 19. Quoting Enthone's expert, a person skilled in the art who was examining the Olling patent application would understand that filling of submicron features requires superfilling. Several other references, appendix 946 at 154, 20 through 155, 1. And I believe we discussed earlier successfully plating copper and chip interconnects of 200 nanometers or less is going to involve superfilling, correct? Answer, for those interconnects of that dimension, 200 nanometers or less, yes. For larger interconnects, perhaps not. So Enthone's expert is clearly agreeing that that reference to 200 nanometers is connecting that to a superfilling context. And that same disclosure appears in Barstad, Morsi, and Olling. Further evidence that there was motivation to combine, and the factual error by the board there was key. I believe I'm out of time, so
You're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Heavens?
May it please the court. Good afternoon.
Is claim one representative? Do you agree with BASF?
I do not, no.
Okay.
If this position is rejected by this court, there are other reasons why the claims are valid that were not addressed in this decision.
Okay. Let me ask a couple of questions about the board's decision, because I'm struck by what appears to be, first of all, a miscitation on 21 and 22. Where they reject this argument that the dimensions disclosed in Olling necessarily require superfilling. And they say, no, that's not true, quote, because those specific dimensions could effectively receive electrodeposition without superfilling. And they cite page 2031 and paragraph 69 for that proposition. I have read that paragraph, and it seems to me that it does not support what the board says about it. And I notice, if I recall correctly, that your brief doesn't address that problem. Could you address it now, please?
Sure. I would say two things. Thing one is that in the patent itself, the 992 patent, at column 2, lines 34 and 42.
No. Let's just try it. Be specific. Okay. Is that not a miscite in the board's decision? Paragraph 69 does not support the proposition for which it's cited, right?
No, I think 69 is supportive of the point. And when I say that, what I mean by that is that Olling says there's a 200 nanometer historical fill in the background only of Olling, where he says in the...
Okay. Point me specifically to where in paragraph 69 it says that. I don't see it.
Paragraph 69.
This is at 1029, right?
Yeah. If I were the board, I would have also cited other attorneys.
No, no, that's not the question. The question is, does this support it?
I believe it does.
Weird.
Yeah. Well, when it says, in fact, Olling makes no mention of superfilling, no mention of bottom-up filling, no mention of aspect ratio. Aspect ratio is very
important. That is not the same thing as saying that you don't need superfilling for items of this dimension, and I don't see that in
that,
paragraph
that 69. Statement is not in 69.
Okay, that's the problem. Yes. That's what they say it is, and it isn't. But why isn't that a ground for remanding to have them rethink it?
The reason I would say that it's not is because Olling was talking about historical facts when they moved from aluminum to copper, and you had a 200 nanometer dimension. Olling does not mention the aspect ratio, does not mention aspect ratios anywhere in the patent. The patent at issue, the 992 patent, expressly says
that you know, may or may not be true, but the problem is we've got a board decision, a crucial finding about why Alling doesn't disclose superfilling, a wrong citation, which you admit for that proposition. Why doesn't that mean we should remand?
Because Alling also is a two-metal bath, and a two-metal bath means you're depositing two different metals. And when you're depositing two different metals, you have to hold your resistance level set at each of the two voltages. That's important because...
I don't think that's responsive to my question.
Spot me a minute. When you do conformal coating, you put a suppressor over the surface to have a uniform electrical resistance across the coating. Then when you apply a voltage, you have the same current density across the surface. With the same current density, you get the same deposition across the surface. If you have two metals in the bath, Alling teaches that at one current density, you will only plate the one metal. At the other current density, you'll plate both metals. And the point of Alling is
it's
to have
a different argument. I mean, I've asked you
scientifically, you admit
the board's decision creates as a miscitation on a key point. And my question is, why should we not remand under those circumstances?
The reason is because the statement in Alling is in the background. The rest of the patent talks about what Alling is teaching, which is the chemistry of trying to plate two metals at the same time. And the only way you can plate two metals at the same time is if you're conformal coating each of the two metals.
But the board didn't explain that point, did it, as an independent ground for not giving significance to the Alling statement about the nature density?
It did at the end on page 25. It quoted directly from Barkey. And what it says there, in the highlighted quote, Dr. Barkey also testifies that in the view of Alling, one of ordinary skill in the art would, then the quote, not encounter, acknowledge, or deal with the much more complex phenomenon of superfilling, which requires that the suppressor have balanced properties that allow it to adsorb to the cathodic copper surface, but to be subject to removal, displacement, or exclusion by an accelerator that is also present in the electrodeposition solution, and to a degree that varies along a vertical gradient within the submicron feature so as to promote superfilling. That gradient is extremely important because that gradient is the gradient of the suppressor in the submicron feature. That gradient means you have a resistive gradient. That resistive gradient means you have a variable current. And the variable current means you're going to deposit different metals throughout the thing. You're not going to be in control at all. And so it can't work that way because Alling teaches to deposit one metal or the other metal at two distinct and discrete voltages, which will give you two discrete current densities, which will give you two discrete metals, which is what Alling teaches, two metals. He doesn't teach a mix of metals. He teaches either all the conductive metal or else the alloy of that metal, which is highly resistive. And he teaches plating those one over the other above that 200 nanometer thing that's going on in the chip, because that's what it's designed to do, is to create the layers above the chip that are going to make the interconnects.
Can I ask you,
sure,
when we were talking with Mr. Blythe, the topic that we've just been talking about was one of what is in my mind as two very concrete, focused, specific possible problems with the board decision. We've just talked about one.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you about the other.
Sure.
And that is the specific relationship, inconsistency, as Mr. Blythe says, between what the board said about Barstadt at pages, was it A22, 23, in this case, and what the board said about Barstadt at page A409 in the 786 decision. And I don't mean globally what it said about Barstadt. I think you understand.
Yeah, I'd like to explain why I think the two are consistent.
About the reading of Barstadt as not, in one, as seeming to say that Tektronix product was one of the surfactant suppressors, and in this case, as saying Barstadt didn't really teach the Tektronix stuff as one of the surfactant suppressors.
Well, the direct answer to your question is found in the first board decision of page 18. It's appendix 410. And what the deal is that the first patent, the 787 patent, the 786 patent, I apologize, is directed just to the chemistry, just to the molecule. And we tried to read a superfill function into that molecule, and the board rejected that. Once you take away the superfill function from the molecule, you're left with a prior art molecule.
I'm not understanding this. I mean, there are two seemingly directly contradictory statements in the two IPR decisions. And what I think we're asking you about is, doesn't that suggest that we need to send it back to have them reconcile the two statements?
I don't think so. And the reason I don't think they're inconsistent, because a suppressor in Olling, Tektronix functions as a suppressor in Olling because Olling needs conformal plating.
We're not talking about Olling. We're talking about Barstad. There's two contradictory statements about Barstad. In one, they seem to say it discloses Tektronix as a suppressant, and in the other one, it seems to say that it doesn't. It's that simple.
Okay.
So it's this sentence at A409, which is page 17 of the 786 decision, that says Barstad discloses, well, as noted above, surfactant-type suppressor agents. Barstad discloses polyethylene glycol copolymers as preferable surfactant-type suppressor agents. And that phrase is specifically, I think, at column 3, lines 19 or so, of Barstad specifically talking about superfillings. I don't think he uses the expression superfillings, but it's about fast filling of vias and trenches. And then the sentence immediately continues, sentence in the 786, and expressly discloses the polyethylene glycol copolymers that were commercially available from BASF under the Tektronix trade name. For all the world, that seems to say Barstad connects the Tektronix with the very kind of suppressor agents, namely surfactant types, that Barstad teaches for use in where superfilling is needed.
And I apologize, you started reading before I could see where you started. Can you point me to that page?
A409, roughly line, at the bottom of the first full paragraph, the last sentence.
Where it says, as noted above, Barstad discloses polyethylene glycol copolymers?
Yes.
As surfactant-type suppressor agents. And expressly discloses the polyethylene glycol copolymers that were commercially available as under Tektronix.
Right, and that phrase, surfactant-type suppressor agents, is in column 3 of Barstad, which is talking about the deep, narrow channels for which superfilling is needed. And then the second half of that very same sentence from the board seems for all the world to say, and Tektronix is one of them.
Well, if you look at the actual reference, Barstad, at line 51, it says, particularly suitable surfactants for plating compositions of the invention are commercially available polyethylene glycol copolymers, including polyethylene glycol copolymers. Such polymers are available from EGBSF, Solvay-BS, under Tektronix and Pluronic trade names. It calls them a surfactant. It does not call them a suppressor in the actual reference where that's
said. Doesn't this phrase, surfactant-type suppressor agent, come from column 3, line 21 to 22 of Barstad, which is at A424?
Column 3, line 22?
That's what I'm looking at, yeah. Yes, line 21 to 22.
Well, it says, in addition to such an elevated brightener concentration, preferably the plating bath also contains a surfactant-type suppressor agent.
Right.
The surfactant-type suppressor agent, there is a Pluronic.
It
doesn't have a nitrogen.
It has been surprisingly found that use of such a suppressor agent in combination with elevated brightener concentration can result in effective bottom-fill copper plating of a microvia or other aperture without defects, such as voids and voice, right? So
yeah.
You're talking about this very same superfilling problem, no?
The suppressor that's used in Barstad is the non-ionic
and the
product.
The second half of this sentence at 409 appears to be connected to the first half by saying one of these things Barstat reveals one of such, one of these seems to be the Tektronik stuff.
Tektronik is always referred to as a surfactant in Barstat. The surfactant type suppressor in Barstat is pleuronic, which is non-ionic and has no nitrogen. Tektronik has nitrogen. It's
cationic. The problem is that the board said two different things about Barstat, directly contradictory to each other. In the one patent, the one that's at issue here, they said that Barstat doesn't disclose Tektronik as a suppressor. In the other opinion, they said it did. What are we supposed to do about that?
Well, I think the difference is that in it's what does the word suppressor mean? In the context of superfilling, a suppressor is different than in the context of where you don't have a superfill limitation. And when you just have chemistry being claimed, as you have in the 786 patent, you don't get to include that superfill function. And then the suppressor becomes a broader word. In the context of the 992 patent, which is at issue here, the word suppressor is limited to things that superfill. And then suddenly, your view of what a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand to be a suppressor changes and is much more narrow. And that's how you explain these two cases. The first case was the molecule, the chemistry, no function. So therefore, you have a problem because you can't include the function to survive the art. In the other case on appeal here, you have the function, and with that function, you survive the art because nobody understood that a cationic species with a positive charge that's going to get pulled up to a cathode during electroplating is ever going to release. Okay. The only use, the BASF paper that talked about cationic species called it a type 2 suppressor. It meant it's just good for conformal plating. Everybody thought this kind of a cationic species would only work for conformal, and to the surprise of everyone, it turns out it's the only species that still works even at a 10 nanometer node, much less a 200 nanometer node.
Okay, Mr. Evans, thank you. I think we're out of time.
Thank you.
Mr. Blythe.
Thank you, Your Honor. Quickly, I think a couple of Enthun's arguments that I can address very quickly that are sort of immaterial. One is the continued reference to cationic surfactants and suppressors. It permeates the
brief.
Use
the microphone, Kevin.
The reference to cationic suppressors as opposed to non-ionic, it permeates the brief and it was referenced today. That's something that's not in the claims. There's no claim construction about it, no requested claim construction about it. Nothing in the claims deals with cationic versus non-ionic suppressors, so we think that's immaterial. To circle back, though, to Barstat, there's another section of Barstat.
Are the nitrogen-based components that are recited in the claim, in fact, cationic? In the acids that they tend to be?
They can be if they're in an acidic solution, yeah. But the claims also don't require an acid. And in fact, the specification also describes either acidic or alkaline plating baths. So maybe a better argument if there's an acid, but the acid isn't required either. So circling back to Barstat, Enthun argued that there's a significance about whether or not the 786 patent required superfilling. I think that's immaterial to what the board found about what's disclosed in Barstat. The board clearly, as we've discussed today, linked the disclosure in Barstat of a surfactant-type suppressant to the disclosure of Tektronik copolymers. And if you flip also back earlier in that 786 decision to APPX 400, where the board describes Barstat, it lays out in even greater length the discussion of the surfactant-type suppressor agent and the surprising results of using such a suppressor agent for superfilling. And then in the very next paragraph, again, block quotes Barstad's disclosure of BASF Tektronik and pleuronic copolymers. So again, that's two places in the 786 patent that is clearly linking the disclosure of surfactant-type suppressors and Tektronik in Barstad.
If we sent this back down, other than the two contradictory issues that we've identified in this discussion, is there anything else that you would think the board would be required to address?
I think the board should be admonished to follow the correct obviousness standard. I mean, apply an overly heightened standard based on a general finding of predictability, but I think
we
may be asking too much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bly. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.